We're coming to the end of this episode of The Best of Broadway. Until next time, God bless. And now we'll close with I Go Accustomed to Her Face.
I've grown accustomed to her face. She almost makes the day begin. I've grown accustomed to the tune that she whistles night and noon. Her smiles, her frowns, her ups, her downs are second nature to me now. Like breathing out and breathing in. I was serenely independent and content before we met. Surely I could always be that way again. I've grown accustomed to her looks, accustomed to her voice, accustomed to her face. Marry Freddy. What an infantile idea. What a heartless, wicked, brainless thing to do. But she'll regret it. She'll regret it. It's doom before they even take the vow. I can see her now, Mrs. Freddy Eynsford Hill, in a wretched little flat above a store. I can see her now, not a penny in the till and a bill collector beating at the door. She'll try to teach the things I taught her and end up selling flowers instead. Begging for her bread and water while her husband has his breakfast in bed. In a year or so, when she's prematurely grey and the blossom in her cheek has turned to chalk, she'll come home and lo, he'll have upped and run away with a social climbing heiress from New York. Poor Eliza, how simply frightful, how humiliating, how delightful. How poignant it'll be on that inevitable night when she hammers on my door in tears and rags. Miserable and lonely, repentant and contrite. Will I take her in or hurl her to the wolves? Give her kindness or the treatment she deserves? Will I take her back or throw the baggage out? Well, I'm a most forgiving man. The sort who never could, ever would, take a position and staunchly never budge. Just a most forgiving man. But I shall never take her back. If she were crawling on her knees, let her promise to atone, let her shiver, let her moan. I'll slam the door and let the hellcat freeze. Marry Freddy. Ah! But I'm so used to hear her say good morning every day. Her joys, her woes, her highs, her lows are second nature to me now. Like breathing out and breathing in. I'm very grateful she's a woman and so easy to forget. Rather like a habit one can always break. I've grown accustomed to the trace of something in the air, accustomed to her face.
This is WHFR Dearborn. It's time now for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal for Friday, November the 16th, 2012. Hi, how are you doing out there? Happy Thanksgiving almost. That's next week. And happy Black Friday, which is now going to start, some stores say, tomorrow. So there you go. Uh-huh. And it's kind of scary, I think. And some of the Black Friday traditional stores are actually starting on Thursday night. Some of them are saying, well, our Black Friday sale is going to be this weekend. So, Dennis Reimars, our WHFR News Director, is here in the studio, too, and he'd like to talk.
I'm just pointing at my mic. Actually, if you listen to some people, Black Whatever Day started in July. I know people that far back are looking for all the best deals and saving them till Christmas. I couldn't do that. I have to give gifts away right away. So there's no way I could hold
on to it. It sort of negates the whole purpose of Black Friday. I mean, the whole marketing concept, because it's not Friday anymore. It's just when any time, it's just another sale, whether it's for Christmas purposes or whatever. And I never liked the term black. I always thought that reminded me of the Black Plague or something. I thought that was not a good way to look at it. Although I guess in a way, if it starts at 3 a.m. or something that day, it's still dark outside.
Sure, so I'm sure that's what they meant. No, maybe. But I mean, there was a Black Friday or Monday associated with a minor stock market crash in the 80s, too.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what I think of.
That's ugly also.
Sure.
Oh,
so I would wager the retailers do not want that to be the scenario. They want people with cash in hand.
Right. Well, we do want to continue with our news and views for this week here. And first of all, a qualification. Very often on this show, I get things wrong. Yeah, I do. I know it seems unbelievable to my ego, but I do, and I apologize. I want to get it straight. As Jon Stewart says on his show, in fact, there's nothing like getting it wrong in front of 10 million people every week.
That's right.
To make you humble. And I said, and this is an important qualification, I didn't actually hurt anyone's feelings by this, but I said to Morris Goodman, who was very entertaining last week on our show, that 2 million people did not vote in 2012 for President of the United States, who did vote back in 2008 for president.
2 million less.
2 million less, right. And it's actually 12 million less. That's what it was. That's what was reported even last week. So I was just off by 10 million people there. And in Dearborn, we had only 65% of registered voters. And again, folks, not every adult is registered. But 65%. And in Dearborn Heights, it was only 61%. Shame on them. They're number two. They're not trying harder, I guess,
no.
To turn out of the poll. So we didn't even have a so-called supermajority of two-thirds that decided to vote for president. And this has to do with all candidates for president, not just Barack Obama and Mitt Romney. And, of course, on this show, we had the vice presidential candidate for the Green Party, Sherry Hunkala, on the air, their presidential candidate, Dr. Jill Stein. Here's the results for them. Nationwide, they only got about 300,000. That's right, not million, 300,000 votes. That's one-third of 1% of the people that voted. So pretty poor turnout. Now, the Green Party itself, I have their press release in front of me here somewhere. They're saying it was because the national commercial media is constantly saying, oh, it's a big difference, the election of your life, and you know it's Obama versus Romney. And so I guess, like, usually the Green Party attracts Democrats primarily, and or other people, progressives, left-wing politicos. And so I guess because of all the hype about it's the election of your life, we can't let Romney win or whatever, that they didn't choose, even if their sympathies were for the Green Party, they didn't choose to vote Green Party this time.
It's also possible they just flat out didn't know about them, because we talked about the disparity with the budgets.
Right.
With
their whole financing for advertisements and mailers was only $1 million.
$1 million.
And Romney and Obama together, almost $2 billion were spent on TV ads and mailers and signs and buttons and pins and whatever it takes. And so I really believe that if people knew about valid, that is mathematically possible, third-party candidates, they might have voted for one of those rather than Obama and Romney.
We're not just talking, I mean, that maybe not in this election, but at least they'd have done the research and in the future. And I think that's the point. But you yourself said the libertarians, record numbers.
Right. Big success for Gary Johnson nationwide in terms of previous Libertarian Party presidential polls. He got almost 1,300,000 votes. So that's over four times what the Green Party got for their presidential candidate. And you say, well, how much money did they spend? They spent $3
million. Okay.
Three times as much, they get four times the votes. it almost works out that way, I'm sorry to say, folks. Although trying to get an incumbent out of office, you usually have to spend more money, even if it's a great candidate. Who in any election race, whether it's partisan, nonpartisan, the Common Cause organization, the lobbyist group out of Washington, D.C. that's in favor of just free access, democracy, and so on. Their studies over the years have shown that a challenger for any office must spend, on average, in their campaign at least twice as much, if not three or four times as much, in order to get attention for themselves and to win their race. Three or four times as much. So, you know, a lot of the purpose of some of the campaign finance laws that were championed by Common Cause over the last three decades, we're simply asking for public financing to make it equal. Well, you know, incumbents shouldn't have worried about that one because equal won't hurt them. A challenger, especially one with whose name is not familiar in one way or the other to the voters, equal won't do it in order for them to make their case and to tell people who they are, what they stand for, and why they might be better than the present candidate. So Common Cause is not asking for that much. They're asking for equal funding somehow for all candidates who are on the ballot and equal time to get their message out on radio and TV, therefore. Just Libertarian Party did a great job. Gary Johnson got, I think, about 400,000 more votes than their previous highest number, which was Ed Clark. I think it was back in 1990s. Ed Clark was a presidential candidate. He got more votes than Ron Paul did for president when he was running on the Libertarian Party ballot. But that was because he wasn't even in national politics at the time. He was only a libertarian, and nobody really knew his name. Now, after 30 years, and he gave his, by the way, I think it was yesterday, he gave his farewell address to Congress after ending his career as Republican, so-called Republican.
The Constitution failed.
That's anyway, I've got to hear. Yeah, we read some. I haven't read anything about that speech.
Wow.
I'd like to hear it. Must be out there somewhere.
You know, what's interesting, though, is you showed me something earlier, and I'm trying to remember. It may have been an American Free Press, mm-hmm. the most current issue, that
yes.
says that their stance was that had Ron Paul been the nominee or the candidate for the Republican Party, he may have won. I thought
yes,
that was really interesting.
Yes, and you might ask, did Dennis misspeak? He said American Free Press. Does he mean Detroit Free Press? No.
Jay makes mistakes. Dennis.
No, there is a national newspaper. It comes out weekly. It's called the American Free Press. It's not on newsstands, of course, but it is, although if you could find it on a newsstand, it's $2 a copy. You can go to their website anytime and read their stories, although not the full stories, but the headlines anyway. If you want the full stories, you have to subscribe. I think it's $15 a year for full access, and their newspaper is weekly, as I said, and it does cost $60 a year to subscribe in advance. I do happen to have a couple copies here in the studio of their last two issues, and their current weekly issue, November 19th, the headline story, well, it says Romney Flops. That's the title, which is kind of funny. They know he didn't flop. He got almost half the votes that were cast for president. So, this is the story, and this is the spin for the American Free Press. They say, they call themselves, this is their heading, your weekly newspaper from Capitol Hill, that is Washington, D.C., since 2001. That's when they began. Populist and independent, not Republican or Democrat. Okay, so, but here's their comment about the election. Because we did the typical national Morris Goodman liberal and conservative points of view, I think, on our show last week. So here's an alternative point of view from the American Free Press, from Michael Collins Piper, who is one of their major writers for their paper. The 2012 election result upset many AFP readers and pleased others. An eclectic group whose views are not as predictable as both AFP's friends and critics might presume, AFP readers had a mixed and quite nuanced view of the Romney Obama contest. Obama, a liberal, was naturally never popular with many AFP readers who were generally quote-unquote conservative. Concern that Obama was foreign-born and thus his presidency defied the Constitution was foremost in many minds. Well, that's to them, okay? I mean, for me, I don't really care. This is terrible because it's anti-constitutional. I don't care what their background is. I want them to be a good presidential candidate. That's all. What do they stand for? Are they, in a way, I don't care if they're a citizen U.S. or not. Oh, is that radical? No. What difference does that make? A lot of people grow up in this country. They don't know this country very well. I bet some illegal immigrants know this country better than some of the people that were born here in terms of history and the nature of the problems at the bottom for the majority of us. But in any event, don't worry about my opinion. And remember, all opinions on this show, including mine, are not necessarily those of Henry Ford Community College. Well, he goes on, though, and he says, those, however, were not the concerns of the average voters who were not as well-informed as AFP readers. Ooh.
That's a strong statement. Yeah.
Despite what the major... Well, you have to be fairly intense in your desire to find out a wide range of opinions to even discover the American Free Press.
Sure.
AmericanFreePress.net, by the way. That's their website. He says, despite what the major media might suggest, the election was not really an endorsement of Obama, but more a rejection of Romney. That's their opinion. The truth is that Romney, a classic Rockefeller Republican who tried to sound conservative, quote unquote, failed to rally enough white working middle class voters to his cause in order to prevail over the lopsided minority vote that favored Obama and gave him both the popular electoral vote edge. Many middle class white voters were repulsed that Romney made a fortune through what Rick Perry, the conservative Christian governor of Texas, correctly described as vulture capitalism, referring to Romney's outsourcing of American workers' jobs abroad. Americans like good, solid business success stories, but they reject predatory plutocrats. Have to look that one up. Who's a plutocrat? Are they from Pluto?
Mm.
No. Who harm American workers, and that's how many voters perceived Romney, he says. Also, American Free Press goes on, in addition, after two foolish no-win Middle East wars orchestrated by the last GOP president that have bankrupted the United States, many voters who think America should look out for America first repudiated Romney as a bellicose internationalist eager to engage in war against Iran. Despite the rhetoric, there was a little difference between Obama and Romney, even on quote-unquote social issues where theoretically they parted company. For example, even as pro-life Christians rallied for Romney, his surrogate, ex-Senator Norm Coleman, Republican Minnesota, assured Jewish voters that Romney would do nothing to overturn legalized abortion. Had the GOP abandoned the standard Me Too game that the Republicans play every 4 years and nominated a candidate who could have offered middle-class voters a real choice, namely Representative Ron Paul, Republican Texas, that Dennis just mentioned, of course, in this context, Obama would be getting ready to leave the White House on January 20th. So that's what they felt the Republican Party should have, except the members of the Republican Party almost exclusively, I'd say 90% of traditional American Republicans didn't like the libertarian point of view.
No,
for whatever reason, which is crazy because the libertarian point of view, as we tried to point out, not in favor of them, folks, but a lot of liberals and progressives and even the American Free Press liked Ron Paul. So they could have pulled votes from both sides. But the one thing Ron Paul didn't like is those unnecessary, unjust foreign wars that have bankrupted us. And to what end? Does it make us safer? Well, the American Free Press has stories every week about it's not making us safer, even what we're still trying to do in Afghanistan with our drone attacks. It's not making us safer at all. It's making those people hate us even more because of the so-called collateral damage, that is, the innocent people we're killing along the way. And Afghanistan is pretty far away from our shores.
Yeah.
And they're not a well-developed, civilized country. They don't have major weapons of mass destruction at all.
No.
So let them live in their caves, I say. You know, I mean, it's crazy to me, and I'm not taking libertarian or anybody's point of view. I'm just saying as a human being, how can realistically they be a threat to us at all? get the heck out of there right now, which is what Gary Johnson said. It's what Ron Paul said within the Republican Party. It's what
Jill Stein says.
Jill Stein said, even Green Party sure. even said that. So, yeah. So here's the conclusion from the American Free Press article. Fed up with GOP antics, many Republicans and AFP readers chose not to vote, or they voted for so-called third-party candidates, such as third positions Merlin Miller. And I know they had a story about him a couple of weeks ago. He wasn't on enough states' ballots to mathematically even be a possible person. But if he was on the ballot and you had a protest vote, if you will, or you just liked the guy, and I don't know anything about him. We didn't talk about him here on this show because he wasn't on the Michigan ballot. But something to look at. Is the third position going to be a new political force across the U.S.? How many votes did Merlin Miller get? I don't know. Libertarian Gary Johnson was another, of course, choice to vote for. The Constitution Party's Virgil, and it's not Goody. Is it just Good?
I think it's G-O-O-D-E, Good.
Yes, it is. It's just pronounced Good. Mm-hmm. He was on the ballot in Michigan. Or Green Party, of course, nominee Jill Stein was another possible person to give your vote to if you weren't for Obama or Romney. So AFP, American Free Press, encourages efforts challenging the two-party monopoly, angering some readers who view any GOP candidate as superior to any Democrat. Because, again, a lot of American Free Press readers are GOP members, but they're conservative and they don't think any Democrat should be voted for it ever. But AFP is more open than that. Other AFP readers reject the process and believe every election is fixed, quote unquote, through computerized vote fraud, because they're conspiratorial. It's an exciting little thing to read because you get stories that, oh, did you know this conspiracy? You know, they're out to get us. You know, they're working behind the scenes. And, of course, if you don't find out about these conspiracies, they can never be ended if they exist. Now, if they don't exist, well, that's a good way to prove them false, is to find out about what people are saying and then to look at all the facts and then say, wait a minute, that's not really valid, that they don't really exist. So this is kind of a conspiratorial newspaper, too, because they cover all those stories.
That just makes it more fun.
It does. many of the cynics hope, they say, for a second American Revolution, capital R. And that was the title of second from last Ron Paul books, Revolution. And they may be the most realistic reformers of them all. In other words, we need to get some change. We need to get some things happening. In terms of stories that aren't well reported in the major media, I wanted to give credit to and actually spend a little time today talking about the Metro Times issue. Okay? I don't know, Dennis, if you have a copy in front of you there?
I do.
Okay, yeah. Kurt Guyette. And this happens almost every year, is they have one issue probably around this time of the year that they devote to a recent book produced by Project Censored. It's an organization. And it is the top 10 stories that are censored each year that don't get enough press. Okay? And why is that? It's because the stories are too scary or too much criticism of the powers that be in this country and other countries. And so the Metro Times has got the top 10 stories, and they've summarized them. Now, you probably want to get the book from Project Censored and read about it yourself. And I don't see the title offhand of the book, but again, a Metro Times edition this week, published November 14th, 2 days ago. You can pick that up for free various places. So I'd like to just go down the top 10 and see what you heard about this. Number one story that's most underreported, most censored by the powers that be in the United States this last year, signs of a growing police state. And they say in the Metro Times, since the passage of the 2001 Patriot Act, so-called, I say so-called because there's nothing patriotic about it, but the United States has become increasingly monitored and militarized at the expense of civil liberties. In fact, there's a story in the American Free Press this week, I just happened to notice, is that more and more foreclosures are happening by using police SWAT teams. because they have to go in and evict who's ever still living there.
Right.
Okay, they foreclose, but the people stay there until they're forced out. Well, it used to be just one officer from the county or the police would go there and
talk to them. Yeah, court bailiff, one guy.
Right, sure. I remember Michael Moore's first movie, he talked about foreclosures in, he showed foreclosures in Flint, Michigan. And it's just like one guy, the sheriff or whatever, going house to house, and he's sad, but he's sort of helping them out the door, and they're moving and that. Well, now across the country, they're not fooling around with that. They're using police SWAT teams in the city, armored, with guns drawn. Break down the door, kick them out. That's an example of I think needless militarism. But hey, if you got all that, all those weapons and all that armored padding and helmets, why just leave them sitting around?
Yeah,
why not use them for
sure.
Some productive purpose? Let's
let's
wear them every day. Let's get them on the streets. Last time I visited Colombia. Okay, Colombia. It's a country in South America. I wasn't going to buy drugs. I was a tourist.
That never crossed my mind.
Okay. I was on a tourist bus, to honest folks. We visited museums. But it was Sunday. So I thought, oh, what a beautiful day to see the Colombians out in their capital city, Caracas. Oh, it was Venezuela. Caracas, Venezuela. And beautiful day. Let's look at the Colombians on a Sunday. The military is out patrolling.
Yeah. Sunning themselves.
In the capital city. Every street had armed guards and the military. And there was no riots. It was just typical Sunday in Caracas.
Well, that's why there were no riots.
That's right.
Because of armed presence.
They're totally armed military, armed carriers out there right on the streets. And it's Sunday in Caracas.
That makes me rather apathetic, seeing the military.
Well, what a great fun day to go out and tour Caracas. Scary. I thought, oh, my God. Well, I think it's true here, folks. Signs of a growing police state for no good reason. You say, whoa, there's all those terrorists. Well, show me one. Okay, bring one right here. Come and show me a terrorist. I want to see one. Where are they? Okay, most of the upsets in this country have been, people going crazy with their guns. They're not terrorists. Well, they are to us, but they're homegrown people, wackos. Okay, have nothing to do with jihadist movement of one sort or another. Okay, they're just local crazies, and we've always had them. Never been as well reported. And so we don't need this much police. I'm sorry. We don't need this much armed police and SWAT teams that we have. You say, well, we're glad we have them just in case. Yeah? Well, President Obama has signed an executive order now, authorizing widespread federal and military control of the national economy and resources during quote-unquote emergency and non-emergency conditions. That's the direct wording of the bill, non-emergency. So if it's non-emergency, the president can just take over, with police, of course, and military, whenever they want to.
That's even more harsh than our the state public act 4 that just failed.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's
really
there, and about indefinite detention. That's the Patriot Act.
Yeah.
For any reason that the TSA or the president says that somebody is suspected of being a terrorist, they grab you, they throw you in prison in this country or somewhere else in the world. They can torture you. No right to free trial. No to fair trial. No right to speedy trial or representation. That's the law right now, the Patriot Act of 2001. It was renewed twice by our friendly Democrats and Republicans.
And that's it doesn't matter. You could be
it's
as
so
American,
anti-American.
Right, you could be as American as apple pie and mom, and that doesn't matter. It's not just selected for people that are
exactly the laws that Hitler put in place when he was taking over. Gave him the right to do whatever he wanted to do in the middle of the night with his Secret Service. And Stalin, of course, people disappearing. Latin America, Les Disparus, there was a Rolling Stones song about rock and roll song in the 70s about all these people just disappearing in the middle of the night. Yeah, because the military government, the dictatorship, that's what they did. They took up dissenters in the middle of the night, killed them, dropped them in a hole, and they were called Les Disparus, or the disappeared. And I'm not saying it's happening much here, but they could do it now. They made it legal. We let them make it legal. Has that been reported? No. Journalist Chris Hedges, one of my favorite editorial writers, by the way, Chris Hedges, along with co-plaintiffs, including Noam Chomsky, always a great spokesperson for individual democracy and freedom, and Daniel Ellsberg, the man who gave us the Pentagon Papers. He stole them from the Pentagon and showed that the whole Vietnam War was based on falsehood, that our military needed an excuse to go into Vietnam and start a war. In other words, that war had no good reason. It wasn't even a preemptive strike. There was no reason to do it. And yet we went in there and we lied about why. We created the Tonkin Bay situation and that attack on our warship as an excuse. There was no good reason to escalate that conflict or even go in there in the first place. But John F. Kennedy did that.
I think you're still on number one, aren't you?
Still on number
one.
We got
to get through a couple of these.
I know. But anyway, Hedges, Chomsky, and Ellsberg did win a case challenging that National Defense Authorization Act that allows the military to detain indefinitely without trial, as it's called now, NDAA, on September 1st when a federal judge blocked its enforcement. But her ruling was overturned on October 3rd. So the clause is back. So we still have indefinite detention. We still have emergency and non-emergency executive power to move in anywhere they want to at any time. That's not the America I grew up in. It's not the America I want to live in. I saw, this is just an aside, and music artists are not necessarily thought of as being great political commentators, but I saw Lynn Miles, who's one of the great folk singers from Canada, and 25 years of great folk singing and folk songwriting. I saw her two nights ago at Trinity House here. Where's that, Troy?
Or Livonia.
Livonia, yeah. And she was saying, all of us in Canada were watching our TV sets, and we couldn't believe what we're seeing. That anybody would support Mitt Romney, she said.
She said that?
Right, because Mitt Romney was not for any of these so-called social nets, you know, Social Security, Medicare, health insurance. He wanted to do away with Obamacare. And, of course, in Canada they have universal single-payer health care. They love it. Even their very conservative prime minister, Stephen Harper, he's for it. You know, that's sure, because the whole country's for it. It's compassionate. Like, George W. Bush, you should say, compassionate conservatism, you know, and so he's all for it. They keep trying to improve it and increase the benefits to everyone. There's no separate health insurance. There's no payments. There's higher taxes for everybody. But, you know, they said, and Lynn said, actually, said she said that if Obama wouldn't have won, she would have considered moving to Europe. Well, that's how scary it was, as she was trying to indicate, is that close to our borders. You know, Romney totally hating, you know, all the social safety nets that help keep the country strong and well-educated, you know, and free college education and things like that. She wouldn't even want to be close to America. That was her point of view. And it's crazy because Europe is got those same sort of safety net programs that Canada does, but some of them are even more like, for example, healthcare is better in France than in Canada in a similar universal single-payer program, but better, actually, because of the way they do it. Nonetheless, let's move on to number two. So number one, signs of a growing police state. Has that been reported anywhere? Do you care? You should care. More police don't make you safer. Okay. In fact, we don't need all the police we have. Why? Because crime is going down. He said, well, that's because we have more police. No. Okay. Oceans in peril, number two story, least reported. I think it's quite explicit what it's saying. The actual quality of the sea to support life, to support fish, which is one of our key food sources. I don't eat fish. Well, maybe you don't, but a lot of people do in this world. And the oceans are dying in many places, and it's increasing. And is that reported? Should we care? We should care because we're partly contributing to it because of the trash and other toxic things we're dumping into the ocean. This is part of the environmental change problem, environmental crisis problem. And because it's not directly in the middle of America, the ocean is, you know, one side or the other, Atlantic, Pacific, we're not concerned about it. Well, we should be. Yeah, we had a little hurricane coming from the ocean that hit New York and New Jersey, of course, and other places in northeastern America. But, you know, that's, you know, the ocean, and it's, I've been a supporter of the Cousteau Society for years because they're concerned with the health of the ocean. And we need to be concerned about that, or we're all going to die, seriously. Not because of climate change and drought in America, but because the oceans, which give us fresh air from the algae and so on, that ecosystem that the ocean provides, so important to all of us, they're dying, okay? All right, number three, what about Fukushima? Okay, what about the nuclear disasters there? Well, guess what? They're still going on, and there's an information blackout. It's terrible. You know, one woman I know had to stand up and buy in Japan. She was only 20 miles from the biggest meltdown reactor, and the government said, oh, it's safe to live there. And so she went out and bought a $600 Geiger counter in her house and took it around from house to house all by herself, a relatively poor woman. It totally proved that it wasn't safe to live there, and the government was lying to them. The radioactive levels were way too high, and there's still more of those reactors that are ready to go belly up, and they don't know what to do with them. And that's you say, well, that's not a threat. Yes, it is. Remember how much radiation travels around the planet? That's already been proven. After the Fukushima disaster, the radiation levels on the west coast of America rose quite startlingly high. You say, well, it's 6,000 miles away. Okay. And of course, the earthquake that caused the disaster in the first place off of Japan, those tidal waves hit America too. They weren't disastrous for the West Coast, but you know, we're living all in one planet, and we can't let the Japanese government keep this quiet because it affects all of us. Number four, FBI informants instigate terrorist plots. Okay, read about it. Metro Times, Project Censored, this week. Number five, first ever Federal Reserve audit. We finally got a reserve, partial audit. The first time in history this year. Remember Ron Paul's last big book, End the Fed. But if you can't end it, then maybe we ought to at least audit it. And there's still bills in Congress to do a decent job of actually finding out what is happening to our money and what is the Federal Reserve really doing. You know, there's no direct public oversight on the Federal Reserve. Well, this first ever reserve audit, did you hear about this? No, it wasn't in the news much. It reveals at least $1 trillion in loans and conflicting interest that we didn't know about before. That have no, in fact, they were giving out money to the banks with no interest, even not even doing any paperwork. So you wouldn't even have to pay it back.
I can't shake deals and then nothing.
Yeah, you say, well, a loan, you have to pay that back, though, even without interest. No, not in this case. What in the world is going on there? What? You know, this is $1 trillion. Wasn't it part of the bailout? No, this is in addition to the bailout, which is only $800 billion. This is $1 trillion that is gone. Why did they do that? Don't you think somebody should have been monitoring that and saying whether it's good or bad for the country as a whole? That was even kept quiet from Congress. It was secret. Okay, that was number five. Number six, some of most censored stories of 2012, a small network of corporations controls the entire global economy. Yeah, even the music business now. Maybe Dennis knows this. Two companies control 80% of the music business that is selling records, CDs, and downloads in the whole world. Somebody might say, well, Apple. Well, okay, but the artists and their music companies, it's just two companies. Two companies for 80% of the world. Universal, they're the biggest, about 70%. And the other one is now the new merging of Sony and EMI. And that's it. They can, you know,
it's now called Semi. Sony, yeah.
And all the other music artists and companies that we mostly play here at WHFR. Why? Because the big commercial stations don't play these artists, but they're equal to or better than the people that are being supported by those two companies. That's called an oligarchy, folks. An oligarchy oligopoly. That's where two companies act in effect as a monopoly, keeping out any other good ideas from happening.
That's what it is.
It is. And there's many ways in which they do collude, or some people would even say conspire, but those are, you know, emotional terms. So is that good? No. There should be a lot more companies. You heard about competition is good for democracy? What competition? Where is it? Okay. Teddy Roosevelt was known back in 1912 as the trust buster president because he passed a law forbidding monopolies. Should have passed a law forbidding oligopolies too. You know, because two or three or even four big companies can work together to keep the pie theirs. You know, they can, if they control 80% and they talk to each other and they price fix, whether on purpose or just by observing prices back and forth, it's not good for, if you love capitalism, then the small number of companies that control our global economy is not a good thing. Number seven, International Year of Cooperatives. I haven't read about that. That's the co-op business model, stunning growth. And they think it's a problem, hasn't been reported, and I don't even understand it. So I'm going to read about that more myself. Number eight, NATO war crimes in Libya. NATO doing war crimes in Libya. Remember Libya? Okay. Muammar Gaddafi, not in power, dead now. Okay. What was NATO doing there? Well, they were killing people. Not authorized. Oh, boy. Number nine, prison slavery in the U.S. The United States makes up less than 5% of the world's population, yet U.S. prisons hold more than 25% of all people imprisoned globally. Why is that? And by the way, Michigan leads the country. We have a higher percentage of Michigan citizens in prison than any other state.
Go us.
Why? But why in the U.S.? Why do we have so many people in prison?
You'd say tougher.
We have more criminals here than anywhere else in the world? Go figure. Maybe our laws are enforced unfairly. Okay? It says many of these prisoners... Okay, let's forget about why they're there, even though that's shocking enough. Many of the prisoners, the article says... labor at 23 cents an hour or similar wages in federal prisons contracted by the Bureau of Prisons Unicor, which is a quasi-public for-profit corporation, which is the U.S. government's 39th largest contractor. The Unicor Manufacturing Corporation proudly proclaims that its products are quote-unquote made in America. That's true, but they're made in places where standard labor laws don't apply. Prison workers are often exposed to toxic materials, and of course they have no legal recourse. Because they're prisoners. So that's called slavery, folks. By the way, inmates work for the Department of Defense through projects, too. They make parts for missile systems, battleship anti-aircraft guns, landmine sweepers, as well as night vision goggles, body armor, and camouflage uniforms. All made in prison under what, in effect, is slave labor. Mostly African-Americans in prison and Latinos are in prison in our prisons. And that's another question, okay? That shouldn't be happening, and we shouldn't be making corporate profit on our prisoners either. And as I pointed out, I think the average in Michigan is we have to, for every person we have in prison, we spend as taxpayers $35,000 to keep them in prison. Couldn't that money be better spent? You know, $40,000 is poverty level, but still possible for a family of four. Could we just give them the money and say you've got to be good now? Well, it's not realistic. Well, we could relocate them to a whole new community. Give them free housing. Give them $35,000 a year for doing nothing. I mean, it's unbelievable. But that's obviously money that's poorly spent. It's a poor resource, except for the companies that are exploiting them for 23 cents an hour wages under conditions that they have no control over, that the prisoners have no control over. So it's not just license plates, folks. Made in prison.
This last one is a good one, though.
Yeah, this big deal. Number 10, real big deal. And there might be more if you read Project Censored's book. Just came out. I don't know the title, but H.R. 347 criminalizes protest. Did you hear about this one? In March 2012, just a few months ago, 6 months ago, President Obama signed into law H.R., that's House Representatives 347, the Federal Restricted Buildings and Grounds Improvement Act of 2011. Sounds like they're trying to plant more flowers.
Yeah, that's what they want it to sound like.
The law specifically specifies criminal offenses as the acts of entering or remaining in areas defined as restricted, quote unquote. In other words, whatever the government says is restricted, and if you go in there, you're guilty of a felony. Although pundits have debated to what extent the new law restricts First Amendment rights or criminalizes Occupy, that's right, the Occupy movement protests,
sure.
Remember them?
Sure.
It does make it easier for the Secret Service to overuse or misuse existing laws to arrest lawful protesters by lowering the requirement of intent in the prosecution of criminal activity. The law makes it a felony to knowingly, quote unquote, enter a zone restricted under law, which the government defines, they can do it real quick, or engage in, quote, disorderly or disruptive conduct in or near the zones. You don't even have to be in the zone, but if you're near it, you just committed a felony and go to prison.
I have a great example for you. It came in an email, and it was right before the actual election. Mm-hmm. We had something from the Green Party about the pipeline that they were building in Texas, and we mm-hmm. had the people that did not want to get out of the trees. So our you remember this?
Yeah, they were protesting in the area around.
Which mm-hmm. They were in a restricted area. Well, mm-hmm. on the way to help these people, Dr. Jill Stein, the presidential candidate, and Sherry Ancala were walking with stuff to eat, sustenance, including Halloween candy, I mm-hmm. might add.
Okay.
And they were stopped without, they were not told they were in a bad area, as they put it, no warning shot. And they were not, the people who arrested them were not told that they were authorities.
They were in jail for at least a day.
And they were in jail for more than a day, you're right. Yeah. So without being told why or anything, that's crazy.
Right, because this is not just private property. Well, they must have went into a private property thing and were arrested for trespassing. No, this means anywhere the government says, for no good reason, no necessary reason that they tell you or have to validate, you know, that's all of a sudden a restricted zone. And if you're on or near it, we can arrest you, and you've committed a felony, a major crime, and we can throw away the key. We can prosecute you, too, and throw away the key. Or they could release you if they wanted to do so, drop the charges. But this just means anywhere is trespassing if the government says it. And it's not just a minor. I think trespassing is a misdemeanor, actually,
sure,
in most
absolutely.
Places. But it's a felony. Now, of course, we understand that the property of the White House and the grounds of the White House in Washington, D.C., that that's a restricted zone all the time,
sure.
permanently. But they have the soldiers there permanently, mm-hmm. too, around it. And that you can figure that out. But this can just happen anywhere at any time because they feel like it. You know, well, they must have good reasons. Do they? Maybe it's their own reasons. Maybe it's not our good reasons. You know, it's actually guaranteed in the Constitution that we have not just free speech, but right to legally
assemble.
Assemble. That means stand somewhere on public property and speak and hold a sign as long as you're peaceful, as long as you're not shooting somebody. You got a right to do that. Now, other times, yeah, the protest. You want to get arrested. Henry David Thoreau on civil disobedience. He said, most of the time, you don't have to get arrested. An evil machine will fall apart by itself. But if that's not going to work, if you can't use legal means, then you have to throw yourself into the machine, which actually means getting arrested for trespassing or something like that. And he didn't think it would be a felony because he got arrested once.
Yeah, but it wasn't a felony back then.
It was for not paying his tax to vote. They had voter tax. And he said, I'm not going to pay a tax to vote. Voting should be free. Well, they threw him in jail for, was it a day or two? So he wrote an essay in jail about that. So that showed them, because that'll live on forever. Did you ever hear about H.R. 347? Should that be a law? I don't think so. What do you think? I mean, tell the people in Congress. Tell John Dingell. Get H.R. 347 out of there. Did Dingell vote for it? I bet he did. Because it overwhelmingly passed. Because, the Occupy protest movements. How are we going to deal with those people? Oh, my God. If they're lawfully protesting or if they're committing a misdemeanor trespass, then do what you need to do. Treat them like real people, not like cattle with SWAT teams and riot gear. Treat them respectfully for exercising their rights as citizens of this country. Sure, if they got a gun or something, or they're doing something to hurt people or burn property up, that's a little different action that you have to take. But so these are only 10, and there's many more that haven't been in the commercial media. We're just saying thank you to the Metro Times for covering those 10 in this week's edition. But you could check out Google Project Censorship. They have a book every year. Along with Jesse Ventura, too. He always has a book every year about conspiracies and stories that aren't reported in the press. And he does a good job in those books, by the way. Sometimes on his TV shows, he's a little wild-eyed and crazy. But on TV, you can't explain yourself at length. You just have to sort of sensationalize it and and show wild pictures, and so you can't judge whether something really is a problem or not from that. You can be entertained and amused, but if you don't do the research, so I'm saying Jesse Ventura's books are pretty good. He's got a lot of very interesting information there. So American Free Press and Metro Times, check them out this week and in the future if you want some more points of view on what's going on. Read, think, that's what we recommend. Got a couple comments here on the election from Jim Hightower, now our friendly populist from Austin, Texas.
They came, they spent, and they limped home, tails tucked between their legs. Okay, they didn't limp. They were flown home on their private Gulfstream jets, but still, their tails were tucked down in the defeat mode. They are the billionaire far-right corporate extremists who tried to be presidential kingmakers. Unleashed by the Supreme Court's Citizens United edict to spend unlimited sums of cash in this year's elections, they spewed money into efforts to enthrone Mitt Romney in the White House and turn the Senate into a GOP rubber stamp for totally corporatizing government. As they gathered at exclusive Romney victory parties on election night, however, the mood quickly soured, for key states were choosing Democrats. The people, damn them, seemed to be deliberately voting against the barons. Casino Baron Sheldon Adelson, for example, put down an obscene $60 million on 8 candidates and crapped out on all of them. Also, the uber-billionaire Koch boys reportedly amassed an arsenal of $400 million from their corporate vault and from other billionaires to knock off Obama. But at evening's end, there the president stood, reelected with more than 56% of the electoral votes. And Bob Perry, another self-serving ultra-rightist billionaire, dumped $21 million into GOP super PACs, trying to win Senate races in Florida and Virginia, as well as the presidency. All for naught. Democrats not only gained 2 seats in the Senate, but such new senators as Elizabeth Warren, Tammy Baldwin, Heidi Heitkamp, Mazie Hirono, Joe Donnelly, Chris Murphy, and Martin Heinrich are expected to stand against the corporate kleptocracy that the barons were trying to buy. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, the billionaires reckon that they just didn't spend enough this year. So look for even more obscenity in 2014 and 2016. Two heroes emerged at the polls this year, and neither was named Barack or Mitt. Their names are Galicia and Ken, ordinary Americans with extraordinary civic spirit. While about 40% of eligible voters didn't bother to cast their ballots this year, these two demonstrated that our right to vote is not something to take lightly, especially at a time when Republican officials in several states are going to extremes to deny millions of citizens that right. Galicia Malone, 21 years old, was making an urgent trip to the hospital Tuesday morning because she was about to give birth to her first child. Her water had broken and her contractions were 5 minutes apart, so there was no time to waste. But Galicia points out that the opportunity to vote also ought not be wasted. So, contractions be damned, she stopped at her polling place in a Chicago suburb and patiently went down the entire ballot, determined to be counted in her first election. Ignoring her pains, Galicia says, "I was just trying to read and breathe. This is my first baby, a girl, and I wanted to make a good impression. I want to have a story to tell her." Having proudly delivered her vote, she then drove herself to the hospital and delivered her baby. Now that's a story. Ken Knight of Buda, Texas, is another diehard voter. Literally. Sadly, Ken died from cancer the morning of Election Day. But the previous Friday, the last day of early voting, his wife and several friends lifted him, his wheelchair, and 2 tanks of oxygen into a van and drove him to City Hall. "He was hell-bent on voting," Amy Knight says of her husband. "It was a driving force for him." Her only regret was that she forgot to get an "I voted" sticker for Ken's ride home. This is Jim Hightower saying, so spare me any whining about voting being a pain or too much of a bother for you.
Please join us for a WHFR benefit featuring live blues music on Saturday, November 17th.
Take a ride now, baby. Come and ride with me.
With solo artist Leonardo. Machine Gun Kelly and her band The Thugs. And the Chris Canis Band.
Come and ride with me. Take a ride.
Only a $5 donation at the door for this fantastic show. 21 and over, please. Great blues music on Saturday, November 17th at the New Place Lounge in Dearborn. Don't miss it.
Oh, yeah. Come on now.
Hope to see you tomorrow night. That's tomorrow night, November 17th. Sometimes those pre-recorded spots, they don't emphasize. You just sort of tune them out because they're all fancy produced and smooth and so on. No, we need your help and your support always at WHFR, our loyal listeners. And many of you come out to all of our several events each year and visit with us and donate to the cause. You know, we're 70% supported by you, and the rest of the money comes from student fees, a portion of student fees from the students that attend Henry Ford Community College, and we share those fees with the music department and theater department and the newspaper, of course, our intercollegiate sports, which I think is only basketball right now for men and women's teams. Maybe there's some other intercollegiate competition.
Mm-hmm.
They have volleyball,
baseball, and golf.
Okay,
yep,
yeah,
got it.
Dennis knows. Yeah, and so they take the lion's share of that student fee money, but we take a little bit. But it's not enough to keep going here at WHFR. All the equipment, supplies, and the licensing fees—not from the FCC, but we're talking about music licensing fees—thousands of dollars a year. Our satellite service of classical for classical music overnight costs us $14,000 a year. So, but blues at New Place Lounge tomorrow, starting at 9 p.m., going to 1, 10, only a $5 donation per person at the door, and good food, beverages, 21 or older is required for this, but please help your favorite listener-supported radio station by supporting us. yeah, so we hope to see you there. Also mentioned on the same topic, though, that Sunday at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, the center, in Dearborn at 8 p.m. There'll be a comedy showcase, a benefit for the Going Green Foundation, based right here in Dearborn. And so that's an exciting thing. So we hope that you can get to that. Also, for their sake, I understand that, you know, the Going Green Foundation, they actually do operate a community farm. Crowley Park.
Sure.
And I actually saw that. I knew it was a benefit for them, but I think the original idea was if they can raise enough money, they will pay for the first year's salary for a farm manager.
That's right.
An actual position of somebody that does nothing but making sure the weeds are pulled. I mean, that everything stays on schedule, organizing the volunteers for planting and harvesting. And it's very, very important that they get your support, too.
Oh, that's the thing is that, you know, we've talked to Maureen McElrath quite a bit, and she's been doing a lot of this learning on her own and with limited help, so that she feels this could really take it to the next level by actually having somebody that does this full time.
Right. So a special benefit for Going Green on Sunday at the center here in Dearborn, starting at 8 p.m. $20 a person. I understand the tickets for that. It's only $5 a person. We're so underpricing ourselves for this great blues concert. Three different bands at New Place Lounge tomorrow night, starting at 9 p.m. So hope to see you maybe at both events, although the Sunday event is not a WHFR event, but Going Green is one of those great local nonprofits, and we know and love all of those nonprofits for the work they do for us. Okay, here's an editorial point of view about the election and voting from the Dearborn Press and Guide itself. Mm-hmm. I assume it's Tim Powers, the editor who wrote it. He says, now would be a great time, and of course the word would is misspelled, but hey.
W-O-O-D?
He's got W-O-U-D. Oh. Wood. Where's the spell check on that?
Okay. That's coming anyway. A very passionate man. Yeah. He's writing as fast as he can.
Okay. Post-election talk almost always drifts back to the winners and losers, and no matter which candidate you cast your vote for, November 6th, you won. Many of you arrived at precincts to find long lines and waited patiently because making your voice heard meant that much. Every candidate who thanked their supporters the evening of November 6th or the next morning owed you just as much praise. Add our thanks from the Press and Guide in this case. No one likes to be inconvenienced but across the region, people at some polling locations took it in stride and waited to cast their ballots. Now that the election is over, we sincerely hope Secretary of State Ruth Johnson, who's made some rather odd decisions in recent months about the way we should vote, takes the lead to ensure such delays as we saw November 6th don't happen again. We're 4 years away from the 2016 presidential election, and Johnson has a great chance to call local and county clerks together to come up with ways to streamline the voting process and keep log jams at polling places to a minimum, if at all. Our neighboring state is the butt of plenty of jokes, but Ohio offers a great alternative. The Buckeye State allowed voters to cast ballots on 13 different days leading up to November 6th, and precinct hours are uniform throughout the state. Voters even could visit the polls on the Saturday and Sunday before Election Day in Ohio. Like it or not, work schedules and family obligations occupy so much of our time that it seems almost quaint to dedicate just one day, a weekday no less, to allow people to exercise the most fundamental right in a democracy. It also might be worth looking into state law regarding the counting of absentee ballots. More and more voters, some, no doubt, seeking to avoid the hassle of going to the polls on Election Day, cast absentee ballots today. It makes little sense that clerks are not allowed to begin counting them until the polls close. To us, such a requirement only delays final vote counts and leaves the public waiting long into the night, again on a weekday. Or, what was it, Florida took 6 days, yep. And somewhere else just finished. I mean, it's crazy that it take a week or so to count these votes.
Florida took the longest.
Because the absentee votes and the so-called provisional ballots, which is where you go in and you don't have the right ID and they got to check something or whatever, and oh my gosh, it's pretty crazy why it should take this long. I know that was the number one thing that Obama said in his acceptance speech of the or his speech saying thank you very much for voting for me on election night or next day morning, and that was we're going to change that. Yeah, well, you can't really change it from the federal government level. I mean, Congress could pass some laws, I guess, but by golly, it's the Secretary of State. And Ruth Johnson has been nothing, as a Republican, by the way, an obstructionist. Even Governor Snyder told her to lay off a couple of the crazy things she did in the last couple of months because it's an obstruction. She's doing obstructionist things to keep people from voting who are legitimate voters, to scare people away. So... Yeah, not likely, I don't think, Press and Guide, that she's going to change her ways. Press and Guide does conclude, there almost certainly will not be an election between now and November 2016 that will draw the kind of turnout of last week's, and there is no better time than now to begin looking at ways to make the way we vote in Michigan easier. It's one of those statements, we always have them, and then we forget about them for 4 years. It's just like right around tax time every April, the deadline for filing federal and state taxes, somebody says, oh, let's change the way we do this so it wouldn't be such a hassle and take so much time. And, you know, we never do. We never do because it's status quo and, ooh, big change. I don't want to risk my political future in recommending something that might be a change and some people wouldn't like, and then I won't get reelected. I mean, it's our politicians. They're wishy-washy. And that's Dems and Republicans. Neither one really want to do anything. Why do you think we have gridlock? If they wanted to get something to happen, they'd actually work together to make them happen. So, we're all hoping that there won't be gridlock again, but I'm not encouraged.
If you include the Libertarians and the Greens, that's more than 1.6 million voters that went against the grain. Don't you think that's progress? I know this. It's slow and plotting, but at the same time, 1.6 million for Greens and the Libertarians.
I think it's got to be closer to 10% before the Dems and Republicans will notice, and that means people elected statewide and to the House of Representatives and Senate in Washington until compromise and new, what do they call it, new affiliations,
sure,
have to be created to get things to happen. That happens all the time in countries like Canada, France, Germany.